You're looking for some calls, go get the card. Find the card. And be careful, but it's very effective. And really, it goes back to this. Let me say it one more time. Especially in times when the increased competition, you know, you got to outthink. You got to outplay the competition. We're not going to do it with dollars anymore. Because there's a lot of deep pockets and a lot of big companies. You just got to be better.
This is To The Point. A Rhino Experience. Voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts. Cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Hey, what's up, To The Point listeners? It's your boy, Chris, host of To The Point Home Services Podcast. There is no Chad Peterman yet again on this episode today, because like I said the last few episodes, he's become a part-timer. Okay, great. Now, Chad has to listen to every one of those and hear me make fun of him for it, so that's why I do that. But we have an exciting episode today, because right across from me in his Tommy Bahama shirt, maybe that's not Tommy Bahama, but beard looking nice and trimmed up, hair looking good, staring right at me with those stone cold killer eyes is Mr. Ken Goodrich. And guess what? If you know the name Kenny the Flashlight Goodrich, that meant you made it to Rhino X 2024, because that was the nickname that I gave you. I thought that was pretty on point, but glad to have KG back in the studio. Dude, you've been quiet. With the exception of a couple things, you've had some like personal stuff going on. Like you had a daughter, Megan, who got married.
I did. That was a fantastic event. And, you know, it's kind of a, for those of you who haven't done it yet, you know, I'll tell you, you know, they talk about certain things in your life where your life flashes in front of your eyes. But being there at the wedding, you know, I remembered the day that we took her home from the hospital. I started coming to reminiscing, and you really kind of see the whole journey laid out in front of you. You know, time marches on, man. It marches on. But, you know, all in all, it was a great experience, and I'm very happy for her and her rocket scientist husband.
Yeah, she looked gorgeous, and clearly gets that from Wendy. You know, listen, if I was Megan and Ken Goodrich was my dad, I wouldn't expect nothing but like the best wedding ceremony and the whole experience. It looked gorgeous.
Hey, can I derail us just a little bit?
Oh, right off the bat.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I got
to tell you the story.
Okay.
So I'll be as brief as I possibly can. So 15 years ago, I was in California and I was driving back to Vegas doing some work. And I said, let's drive down Route 66. So we drive down Route 66. And if you haven't driven that part of Route 66, there's not a lot there, right? Old gas stations and antique stores and stuff. But anyway, so we stopped this antique store. And I walk in, there's a box of stuff that hadn't been put away. And there was this like 20-inch tall Burger King doll, you know, with a big plastic scary head, you know, but soft bodies, old used Burger King doll, right? Like, on the top of the head is stamped 1980. So I buy the doll because, you know, my daughter and I always like to kind of play jokes on each other with the ugly dolls and the ugly stuffed animals and stuff, you know, and get them for each other for gifts. And just, that's our weird little thing.
Sure.
So I took the doll and I put it under her covers in her bed. Right. And so 11 o'clock that night, she's 16 years old at the time. 11 o'clock at night, I hear her go, "Dad, I know it was you." So the next day I get up and I have a meeting at the bank, you know, like I'm going to meet with the bank and try to get a loan or something. And I get my briefcase and my slacks and nice shirt on. And I go to the bank and I open my briefcase to pull some stuff out. And the doll, the Burger King, is in my briefcase. And I literally have to pull this 20-inch Burger King out and put it on the desk. That's how I started the bank meeting. And so then a couple of days later, I snuck to her school and I put it in her car and I hung it from the rearview mirror so everyone would see the Burger King, and it went back and forth for years, right? Her first night in her dorm room in college, the Burger King ended up in her bed. When she went to Singapore to study abroad, the Burger King ended up in Singapore. you know, I've got it numerous occasions for Christmas and wrapped up in all kinds of different boxes. And so she, I mean, on and on, this doll has been passed back and forth between her and I on special events for this 15 years. At my 60th birthday, you were there. And she presented the doll there at the 60th birthday too. So it's all the antics of the king. So we're doing the wedding. And so the wedding planner says, well, we got to have a special gift from dad. So how about we do a drone show? And have you seen the drone shows? Are pretty cool,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so
awesome.
So we made this whole drone store show about her and the stars flying out to college with the music background, then the USC logo, and then the rocket flying around the logo, which is him. He's a rocket scientist. And then she's in the music industry. So the music notes spinning around the rocket and the rocket lights up, all this whole story, right? And all the way to the champagne bottle and congratulations at the end. And at the end, my last hurrah for the king is... We had a 350-foot tall in the air Burger King head show up with drones, right?
Perfect.
And then the chef came out with a serving, you know, silver dome, silver training thing.
Yep, the tray, like with tray, you uncover the food. Yep.
And he pulls it out, and the king is in there with a tux on. We had a tux made for him, right?
That's pretty cool.
So this was the welcome night. So they go, now everyone knew the king's story, who was there, because all family and friends, but they're like, how's Megan ever going to top that? I said, I don't know. I don't think she can top that one. She topped it the next day. The next day she tops it. This is her wedding day.
Okay.
So the photographer comes out and says, okay, we're going to do the reveal where you get to see your daughter for the first time in her wedding dress. So come out here and stand here. We're going to video it. And she'll come tap you on your shoulders and you turn around and you look surprised and give her a hug and all that stuff. I said, okay, cool. So I'm standing out there in my tux waiting. And all of a sudden I feel something's poking me in the back, not really the shoulder. And I turn around and it was a midget in a Burger King costume. A midget in a Burger King costume.
Oh my gosh. Well done, mate.
And so, you know, that was funny and fun and everything. And so, at the reception, he showed up and he passed out tickets to the after party and got some pictures with people and such. So the next day I go, I wonder if I like cheapened this Hollywood wedding I gave my daughter, right? With the midgets and Burger King stuff. I started to feel bad, a little guilty. So I go get to my daughter. I go, Megan, do you think we took this? Think we took the Burger King thing too far here? Like we always take everything too far. And she goes, Dad, the midget was the first thing I bought for the wedding.
I was going to ask. I was like, she must have pre-planned that too. You guys just happened to both do something. Yeah, you knew.
I didn't know she was going to do that, but she said that was the first thing she decided to do.
That's funny. Well, that actually makes a lot of sense. So I remember you telling me the Burger King story before, but it was something completely different. So I remember knowing about the Burger King. Maybe it was at your 60th. I can't remember, but that's cool to see it taken that way. I didn't get to see the full drone show. I'd love to see the full drone show because I'm sure there's video of it.
Yeah, I'll send you the whole video. Yeah,
it looked really cool. I haven't. I kicked around doing the drone show for Rhino X, one of the Rhino X things. They're not cheap. Mm-mm. They are pricey. Yeah,
it's an adult present.
It is an adult present. That's actually well said. Well, congratulations again. Tell me one thing. Did you, Ken Goodrich, shed a tear at your daughter's wedding?
I did.
Oh,
I did.
See, many. Listeners, he is human being.
Many.
Yeah. Good. Good.
But I'll show you this picture and then we'll get off the topic.
Okay.
It was those two coming out. You know, after the ceremony and they're walking out and they're looking at each other and they're just got big grins on their face. Like two kids just smiling like we did it or look what we just mm-hmm. did. And they were so happy. And like that one picture just captures the entire weekend. It was a 3-day event and it just captures them and the relationship. And while, you know, it's just everything everything is right about it.
Yeah.
Just the look on their face. Cause I don't usually see a lot of guys all that. They seem kind of dazed and confused after walking off of, you know, walking off after the ceremony, you know?
Man, it's been 18 years for me. So, and the pictures from my wedding day, I look so much different. I think I got better looking as I got older. Not that I'm better looking, but better looking than I was then. I got better looking with age. Say that. Now I'm just starting to get a little fat.
I've been a little quiet because I've been, putting my next move together and, you know, had my head deep in the books and the computers. I just get so excited when all this money gets invested in the space and these guys don't know how to run them and all these businesses are starting to splinter apart and such. And all these so-called roll-ups are failing. I just get excited about that for some reason.
Well, because you've historically thrived in those situations.
Yeah, I have.
And so that's actually a great segue because that's part of what I wanted to talk about on the podcast. But before we get there, you know, I was talking to Ken Haynes yesterday. Mm-hmm. I shot a podcast with him yesterday, and it's been a while. I think it'd probably been since like 2020 since I did a podcast with him. And I mean, I talked to him at Rhino X and things like that, but we haven't done a podcast. And I was just asking him for his take, you know, like at where, you know, where he's at with Wrench and what he sees from his level. Like, what is his take on the home, like the home services market? Like, give me the state of the union of the home services market from his opinion. Just what is he seeing? What is he paying attention to with all those, you know, big brands in that wrench group? We talked about a couple things. I want to talk about the same things with you, but that's the first one. So like, what are you paying attention to, you know, or what are you seeing? Like what trends, like just tell me, like usually you're focused on the right things in any given market, whether it's good or bad. I'm curious to just say like, what are you seeing in this home services market? And like, what are you focused on that you are willing to share?
Well, you know, there's a lot more money being spent. It's making digital, you know, cost prohibitive. It's right.
Yep.
I mean, you know, middle of July, we've had days when AC repair leads $800. So, you know,
yep.
Makes it hard.
Got to make some big boy decisions at $800 a lead.
Yeah. So we see a lot of that going on. A lot of people poaching, a lot of irrational comp plans for managers and executives, with some of the big groups trying to poach back and forth, but pretty irrational numbers, I think. A lot of promises have been being made to technicians and sales guys and promises of equity, this and that, because the labor challenge has not gotten any better,
yeah.
You know, things like that. But, you know, a lot of scurrying around, I'd say. I think that this is the time where you got to get one really laser focused on your brand and make sure that you're, you know, people know, like, and trust you long before they start Googling anything, right? They got to like and trust you before they start Googling and all the things that are required to create that brand image. I think it's time that, you know, we got to go back to some old school guerrilla marketing techniques and stay in front of customers and such. And I'll always say this, and we had this conversation last time I was here, is like, answer your fucking phone, man. Like, you know,
the basics.
Yeah. The blocking and tackling of the whole thing, you know, they get so excited and trying to figure out how to outsmart the next guy that thinks he's the smartest guy in the room, that the fundamentals go away. And I can't tell you, and it still holds this truth still holds today. I've told people for decades, like, you got a struggling business. The easiest thing you can do is go sit in your call center yourself and listen to what's going on for months, and you'll correct the whole business from right there. And I still see that going on today.
Yeah, because people don't want to do that. Like, maybe you go and sit for a few days, but nobody's wanting to dedicate that kind of time to the call center because they think there's something bigger. What the reality is like that could be the biggest issue. Because no matter what you're doing, let's say you do have a good brand and people are calling in, the buck stops at that call center, right? They can't book the call. And maybe you are giving too much, you know, maybe you're giving someone else too much power over that call center that might not be as good as, you know, as you, the owner, who's, you know, so maybe you need to go pay attention to all of it.
And not to mention, like, maybe you could learn some things about, you know, better ways to communicate your customer with your customers that are more effective to booking the call. Whereas most, you know, most people in those line roles aren't that creative. They just do what they've been told, and they're not thinking like, how can I make this better and easier? Us entrepreneurs typically tend to think like, how can I make it better? Right. Yep. How can I fix this? Right.
Yep. So they're not just going through the motions. We're trying to figure out, how can I make this better? How can I make that better?
But I look at it like this. Look, this is a meat and potatoes business, man. Everybody needs air conditioning. Everybody needs plumbing and electrical. It's not going away. No one's ever going to own the market. And so it's just blocking and tackling. Those guys who will block and tackle the best will win no matter what.
Yeah.
And they will beat the guys who are just going to try to spend their way into a brand, which is not going to happen, a brand and a business and a culture.
I've been hearing this. I've been hearing like some chatter lately, and I have a strong opinion about it, but I'm going to keep my poker face, and I'm going to ask you kind of your opinion on it. And it has to do around brand, but I've been seeing more and more that people are saying, does brand really matter versus personal brand? Like, should you be focusing more on, as an employee, your personal brand, or relying just on the company's brand? Like, you know, which one is more important? And I've been seeing people going back and forth saying, oh, personal brand is now more important. I have a strong opinion about it, but I'd be curious to know what you think. Like, you know, what would you want? If you have a strong brand, do you want somebody who is an employee of yours going out and trying to build their own personal brand while still working for you? One. If you have no brand equity, your new business, do you want somebody going out and building their personal brand too? Like, do you have a strong feeling about that one way or the other?
I'm not sure quite what you mean.
Perfect example. If you had, you know, Steven working for you, who's wanting to go out and build his own personal brand, but he's still working for you. Like, he's trying to build his own brand and say, hey, yep, I'm selling, you know, air conditioners. Yeah, but I still work, or I work at Gettle. Like, he's trying to do his own personal brand versus relying on selling the Gettle brand. I'm selling my personal brand and I'm installing Gettle. Does that make sense? So, and that's trying to attach it to you specific, like to your business specifically, but just one way or another, like, would you rather somebody focus on your brand that you've spent millions of dollars on building, or their own personal brand selling themselves? 'Cause it's a relationship marketing deal.
I mean, if they could coexist and they were, say, I'm Steven and I'm with Gettle, and here's why I'm at Gettle, and his own story and mesh them together, I think that would be valuable.
I agree.
But if they go, separate, I don't think there's a benefit to it. Yeah. I got a really great story about that very thing, but I don't know if we have time. But
I would love to hear that story. I'm sure everybody would love to hear that story. I actually was trying to not use any names that I know. So I was just using Steven's name. So he was the guinea pig. That's not a thing. I just was using him to our listeners, I was just using him as a guinea pig. But I'd love to hear your story. I'm sure it's going to be great.
Well, I don't think we have time, but okay. I'll just, here's a teaser for next time.
Okay.
We had a guy that went to our PR firm and said, hey, I'm only going to work for Ken for another couple of years. So can you start putting my name out a lot at that time we had a company called Yes in Vegas. Can you start putting my name out in the Yes PR a little bit more so I can build my personal brand? So when I'm ready to start my own company, I can go out and do it. And so the owner of the PR firm called me and told me that story. And so I'm just going to set this up for a new time, but we set him up with an article to have an interview with Inc. Magazine and then talk about his whole new venture. And I'll tell you where that went one day.
Oh, baby. Okay. And the story continues. on a later episode. Sorry, listeners. Well, that's going to be good. I can't wait to hear it. And that's exactly like what I'm talking about. That's the scenario. I've just been hearing it more and more chatter about it. I guess I'm kind of, you know, my thing is if someone's trying to build their personal brand, it's easy for them to go and use that brand anywhere. I get why somebody would try to build their own personal brand, because if they left you and went here, they still have their brand. But then how does that make me feel as the owner who's built this brand that they're selling and that they, you know, are passionate? Like, I just have mixed emotions about how I feel about those things. And so,
look, here's what I think about personal brand, and I may be off and, you know, not in touch, and you can tell me if I am or not. I think I have a personal brand, but my personal brand came from a cheap performance, right? Your personal brand comes from actually achieving something notable and representing yourself well, and, you know, being a good steward for your industry, a leader for your industry, helping other people, that kind of stuff. That's where the brand comes from.
Right.
I don't know how you purposely go out and create a brand without performance.
Well, on social media, it's significantly easier to do that because perception is reality,
like,
right?
Like Victor Brancor, that guy, like that.
Okay. Well, moving on from that one. I didn't say anything. I don't know what you're talking about. Okay. I am going to switch. I'm going to pivot a little bit and make sure that we come back to an episode to finish the story on the
Ink Magazine.
The Ink Man.
Actually, it's Forbes.
Forbes Man. Then we're going to finish
the Forbes Man.
So, okay. You mentioned this earlier on this episode that digital marketing is getting more expensive. And it is. Obviously, that's the game that I'm in. Cost per lead's gone up. Search volume has gone down. Not everywhere, but overall search volume has gone down, and it's like an absolute dogfight. And this wasn't like we didn't see it coming. Like we knew it was coming. So we've prepared for it as best as you can. And this is when I'm grateful that, you know, at Rhino, we've got tenure. We have the team to win those kind of battles. Like, we're prepared, but we saw it coming. You and I were talking about this time last year, or even earlier than last year. It was even at ACA, we were having this conversation about, hey, what's this year going to look like? And it's pretty much playing out exactly like I think most on your level knew how this was going to play out. So I'm grateful to be around guys like that, because I kind of get some extra insight and I can prepare. But I think what I've learned is, a lot of our listeners may have missed the mark on that. You know, even though we have been saying, hey, man, maybe you just need to focus on blocking and tackling, or hey, just focus on your CSRs, or hey, get back to basics or whatever. I think that talking about some of the grassroots and like guerrilla marketing stuff that you also talked about a little bit earlier is what I want to talk about, because that's something that you were the king of for years in business and being super successful with, even in like downturn markets. So I thought, like, maybe we could use this episode to maybe go back to some of those things that could actually even still work for some people today. Like, maybe that's something that they can take and run with. And what I was thinking about is, and I've been, you know, the last few weeks when I've been messaging you saying, hey, man, I really want to talk about this postcard. We're going to start with that one because I looked everywhere for it and I could not find the conversation that was happening in one of the Facebook groups. I can't remember if it was on the Einstein's one or Avengers or which one or both, but it was around the controversial postcard strategy that you had, used that was successful. And I know kind of had some like in the conversations, I wish I could find it, cause it clearly struck a nerve, cause there was like 800 comments on this thing back and forth. And, I went back to find it. It must've been deleted, cause I couldn't find it anywhere, because I was looking for people's arguments. But regardless, you launched this brilliant postcard strategy that worked really, really well, that was walking the thin line of, is this illegal? Is this not illegal? And the reality was it was a marketing tactic. And it was a marketing tactic that worked, that wasn't the regular 8x11 like card, you know, thing that you send out. So maybe for those who are listening who didn't read that, who aren't on social media, I don't remember exactly when this was. It was a while ago that you launched this, I believe. But maybe just share with the listeners first, you know, what was the controversial direct mail piece that you sent out? And then we'll start to walk through some of the feedback from it.
All right. Well, I'm gonna tell you a story how we got there. But okay. but let me tell you this. It was 100% legal.
Right.
It was interesting that we would get called out and competitors would say it's illegal, but it was just so good that's all they could say.
They're right? hating, man. It was, yeah. That's why I said it was a brilliant marketing play. Call it what you want.
But the reason why I wanted to talk about this today, because it's really applicable to what's happening in the marketplace right now. Right. And it requires you to think differently and keep your eyes and ears open. And I got to tell you, being curious, for whatever reason, I've just been a curious guy all my life, and I'm always interested in why does that work and what does that do and how can I make that better? I'm just constantly trying to find better ways and understanding how things work. So back in the day, let's say this is, 2002. I'm poking around at night on the internet, right? I'm looking around for business sites, and I'm like, looking for business tools and stuff. And so I end up to this site called, I don't know how to turn that off, so it's going to ring.
Don't worry about it.
It's called the Small Businessman's Toolbox, right? Probably doesn't even exist. So I like, oh, what is that? And like different tools. So you go in there and it says, finance and recruiting. And then you click on that link and it gives you a bunch of stuff. And then it went to marketing. So I go to marketing and it said direct mail. Because at that time, we lived on direct mail. The industry lived on direct mail. And, we were kind of the forefront and just really, millions of pieces of direct mail going out all the time and really measuring performance, trying to get it pushed up from 0.5% booking rate to 1%, all the stuff, and figuring out what makes people look at that card. What makes them look at it and act, and what works and what doesn't work. And Ashley White via direct marketing, she started about the same time. And so her and I came together and, she was our vendor for this, and she had a great creative mind, and her and I would spend hours on figuring the right word, the right color, the right, the right picture or whatever to go on a postcard or a piece of mail to have people open. I mean, we were sending wedding invitations, that size postcard. It felt like a wedding invitation. You'd open up, it was a solicitation for air conditioning service. We'd send Christmas cards and you'd open up and we'd get that kind of stuff. So we're always trying to find a way. So anyway, I go on this site and I see, and I go to direct mail, and then I see this ad, How to Build Your Business Fast with Small Postcards by Bob Leduc, L-E-D-U-C, in Las Vegas. I'm like, well, I'm in Las Vegas.
That was awful direct.
And I go, okay, how much? $9. So I sent Bob the $9 and he gives me this little pamphlet, maybe 10 pages. And it goes through on how he was the number one Wall Street headhunter in the U.S. for so many years and blah, blah, blah. Right.
Is that the picture that you sent me? Was that pamphlet?
Yeah.
That old paper, that old.
Yeah, I still have it. Yeah, I still have it. Yeah.
Okay.
And it goes through it on how he, how he wrote the message and how to get the postage and, how to measure them and all, like how to put it all together. It's just a nice little instruction manual. So I call Ashley. I said, hey, let's look at this thing. This is pretty intriguing because here's what the guy did. He has a 3x5 white postcard. Up at the top, it says date, then time, and then RE regarding phone call. And he would put, please call Mr. Jones at this number. He's been trying to reach you. Sally Smith, executive assistant. Okay. Okay. And that was his whole marketing ploy. And then when people would call him, he'd say, hey, why don't you come work for Gettle and not,
okay.
Not, you know, he was a recruiter, right?
Gotcha.
But,
okay.
But he just put in there that people cannot, they just couldn't not call him. They're like, what is this about? And it was so compelling. He had an extremely high success rate of phone calls and getting people on the phone. Now, obviously this was before digital and LinkedIn and all right. the other ways that you can get this done, but that's what he used. So at the time, I guess this was 2001 because I bought my first plumbing company in 2001. And so I said, okay, how are we going to get some plumbing leads? And I said to Ashley, I go, let's just try this out. And then you buy a list of houses over 10 years old in this specific zip code that we do well in. And when they answer the phone, we'll say, it's time to get your water heater flushed, right? That's why I've been trying to call you, right? And let me go back and say, it's a perfectly white card. And then we had a dot matrix printer font. So it looked like it came out of dot matrix. And then on the front, it had the, you know, the, mail receipt, the stamp thing.
Seal.
Seal. And our name and return address. Okay. But that's all. It didn't say much about the company. Didn't even say a price, nothing. Please call Mr. Jones at this number. He's been trying to reach you. Sally Smith, executive, executive secretary. So we sent 1,000 out and boom, they hit. And the phones like went crazy. They were all lit up and my people were on that. We had about 6 people answering the phone at that time. And
this
they're
is
all
Sally.
On the phone. They're on the phone. And then about, 2 hours into it, the call center manager comes out. We gotta do something. This is terrible. I'm like, what? He goes, these people are so mad. They're like, what did you call me about? And they're saying that guy was saying, I took off work so I could make this phone call. Or my elderly mom was so upset she didn't sleep last night over this postcard, right? And it went on for 3 days. And it's just, they got, out of 1,000, we got so many calls that inundated our contact center that, we were having people honestly ready to quit.
Did it do more bad than good?
We booked no calls.
Okay.
I'm sure we got hundreds and hundreds of responses.
Thank God there were no online reviews at that point.
Yeah. So then we have a little manager meeting and the call center manager goes, oh, good thing we're not doing that again. And I go, hell, we're not.
It worked. People were calling.
People are calling. We're going to figure a way to water it down and get it, perfect this message and see why it worked. Right. So we started adding a little more language to it. And it, kind of ended up like, your HVAC manufacturer recommends an annual or a seasonal system tune up to avoid costly breakdowns and challenges with the severe weather conditions. Contact this number and schedule your appointment. But it was very brief. There was no starburst or no, picture of a polar bear on it. It was all black and white, right? And they started to work. Now, they started to work so well that we were started to grow the business by great gains. This little white postcard, it was the least expensive thing you could do. We had a very direct message. Not salesy. It's like severe weather is coming. Call us now to get your air conditioner ready. Here's the number, basically.
So,
right?
So no like direct call out on anything in particular to any homeowner, like a piece of equipment or anything. It was just a straight, simple, easy, direct message. Got it. Okay.
So we started there and we started to take business, man. We started, the phone started ringing and it worked very well. And we did get a lot of feedback of people saying that, this card looks official. You're trying to hold yourself out as a government agency. I'm like, how? It's a white card with black printing and it says our name on it. I don't know how that's, being looking official, but everyone got freaked out about how it looks so official. And so one day the contractors board calls me in and wants to talk about it because they're getting complaints from competitors and who competitors are saying like our service customers get these cards and they think they're from us and these guys are taking our customers. And I said, well, it has my company name right here and license number. I'm compliant. I don't know how they would believe it's somebody else, but they called us. They may have called us,
hey,
but
look at it.
Yeah.
It's not your problem. Right. Yeah. Your fault.
And, you know, the contractor's board starts going, well, it looks so official. I go, where are we getting this official thing? It's a white card with black type, dot matrix type. It's not official. So we want to make it more, we want you to make it a little more advertising-like. So over the time, we would try to appease them, and we would title it service request or service notice. And we would try all kinds of different words and combinations. And then as it evolved and we really got it to some critical mass in that area, then we would start to say, you know, get your tune-up before severe weather conditions. We're offering a rebate credit of $49 to blah, 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 blah. Call this number by this date, right? But it was very simple and a very straightforward message, and it got you to look at it. So these are some marketing fundamentals that, you know, you could probably tell me better why it worked that way. It was no clutter. It went right to the message. People were intrigued by it. They got a, you know, whatever, a 3-inch stack mail. They pulled that out first. What is this?
So there's some sort of psychological connection to that, but they must have attached it to something. And like, I think one thing that would have made sense is if it was legal, then yeah, you're like, there's a fear of it being like something's wrong. If they read it that way, it has to be the dot matrix, the font, that maybe that played something into it. Maybe that it was just black and white, 'cause that's not normal. Like, people are trying to fancy them up too much. I wonder, but everything has a psychological piece to it, right? Like, you had to pick that piece to look at it because it looked like something that made you feel a certain way. That's the only way I can make sense of it.
Which is, you know, one of the concepts of gray marketing, right? Made you feel a certain way, made you act, made you look at it and listen to it, right?
And potentially take action. Yeah. That's the end game, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And so it worked. And so we're off to the races, and we're sending these things out for 4 or 5 cents. Four or five cents. Postage was pretty low back then when you did a bulk rate. Yeah, about 4 or 5 cents a unit. And we're sending these things out, and we would go into new markets and just hit the card. And some interesting phenomenon with the card is that in some cities, we'd send out 10,000 and we'd get, you know, we'd be booked out for 2 months. And sometimes we'd send out 10,000, not get one call, depending on the market. Like Phoenix, the card didn't work that well. In Vegas, it worked great. So over time, I started giving the card out to some of my buddies in the industry, right? I had one guy in San Antonio as a friend of mine. And so he starts to evolve the card, right? So he decides, I'm going to do a watermark on the card of the seal of Texas, right? I'm like, well, that's where it starts going bad, right?
Sounds like a bad idea.
So all of a sudden he goes and next thing you know, he's talking to the attorney general of the state of Texas and having some challenges with that. And so there are a lot of guys that went off script and tried to overdo it.
Got it.
But the simplicity of the card and just how it looked was really, I believe, what made it work so damn well. And over the years, you know, we just got into some other things, and we started more branding campaigns. We had taken enough heat from the various contractors boards and business licenses and all these people who wanted to try to act like it was official, yet they could never tell us why it was official, that we just kind of eventually evolved out of it. But that card has been distributed around this industry. And for those of you listening who've been around, you've seen that card. It all came from me in that night and that getting that pamphlet from Bob Ledoux and how
for
we created
bucks.
It. And I mean, we tried all kinds of iterations. Like we used to say, records indicate that your HVAC system is due for its annual inspection and tune up, blah, 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 blah.
Play on words.
And then people would call like, what records? They just had to know what records. And they said, well, we bought a mailing list that said your house was 10 years old or X amount of years old. And so we know, and that you had an air conditioner and we know it's time to get tuned up. But there's some words in there that would get people really fired up. But again, it was highly effective. I truly believe to this day that that card that's still in use today, by the way, I still see them out there. I know a lot of Vegas guys just started using them again. And then a company called Stochastic Marketing, they took the card and they've been, that's their staple item for the last 10, 15 years is that card. And they've put their spin on it. But I bet you that one little card from the where it started is the number one lead generator for HVAC replacement that's ever been.
We've got to find one of those. There has to be. We got to find an original.
I had some. I didn't bring them because they were like maybe, you know, six years.
So they weren't evolved. The OG.
They weren't the OG. Okay. I was looking for the OG one, but that's how it got there. And really goes back to the original point is you can't, you know, open your eyes and ears. You know, a lot of the traditional marketing people just got their blinders on and they're just, you know, have this 30-second ad and we're going to say sale, sale, sell and give them a price and make an offer on everything we do and blah, blah, blah. And it's not working.
Yeah.
You got to get out there. If you're going to run your business, you got to get out there and start digging and finding some new truths.
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, Housecall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
One thing you'll hear a lot from Blue On users, they've stopped ordering the wrong part. Derek from FH Fuhrer used to trust vendors for parts, only to send his techs out with the wrong one, costing time, money, and customer trust. Since bringing on Blue On, their misses have dropped to zero. He even says that if a mistake happens now, it's usually because someone didn't run it through Blue On. It's become essential to their parts process. And here at Peterman Brothers, we're definitely seeing that impact too. Click on the link in the description and grab a quick demo. It will be worth it.
Yeah, and I think that's something that you know, if we go back into some of the guerrilla marketing tactics, that's a perfect example of something where you took it, made it your own, and you tried different things, and it worked. But you've done other things that have worked well, too, because, I mean, we've talked about on a lot of podcast episodes, so back in the day, you'd be able to buy some, it may be a business that was failing, and you'd buy their business and or their book of business, their numbers, and you just start cold calling their numbers and you help build these businesses back. Like there's a number of things that you've done that were out of the box. And I think that from, you know, hanging out with you as much as I had and listening to all the stories I've heard you talk about, I can't remember all of them, but there's always a few that stick out. Some I can talk about, some I can't talk about. But when in regards to guerrilla marketing tactics, like you used a lot of different stuff back in the day that wasn't like the traditional stuff, no radio, no TV, true out of the box tactics because of just the way that your curious brain thinks you would come up with these ideas. Can you think of any others or like any other stories like that on some different tactics that you have done that were successful off the top of your head?
Well, let me tell you this. We've been canvassing for 25 years, always had a canvassing team, and canvassing works still today. I mean, canvassing built the whole pest control industry. Canvassing built Orkin, canvassing built Terminix, all the big ones, Rentokil. They built, Canvasine built them all. And especially more out east, Canvasine is the number one lead gen for home remodelers and such. So anyway, I figured that out years ago. And so we've always had a Canvasine team. And the Canvasine kind of goes like this, especially preseason, spring and fall, where you go in and you can round up a cul-de-sac or even several cul-de-sacs and get to a subdivision where you're saying on this date, all our trucks will be here and, you know, sign up and we'll give you a reduced rate. But can you imagine going in one on a Saturday, for instance, and, you know, you have four trucks and they all bang out, you know, 10 tune-ups each, sell a few units, this and that, just converge on it at one time, things like that. You know, but Canvasine still works today and we still have, you know, Canvasine teams out there knocking on the doors.
That's one.
Yeah, that's one.
Yeah. You know, it's been weird to think on, like, I'm taking my Rhino hat off, putting my Redbird roofing hat on. And I think about, man, could that card have worked for our roofing business? And then the Canvasine piece has gotten, it's gotten really interesting because there's, I feel like from even back in the day of just going and knocking on doors, now you can go and knock on doors and just be like, hey, you know, we're working on your neighbor's house. If you see any trash or anything over here, you know, we'll want to make sure to come over here and clean it up. And it's not like a sales pitch. It's just a, hey, if you find anything in your, it is what you are building the relationship. You're trying to make the sale, but you're not talking anything about, you know, anything. Just call me. We're Redbird Roofing. Yeah. So that's kind of like when I like to think about Canvasine, I don't know a whole lot about it because it's not my world. I just like think of it like, well, Canvasine is you go and knock doors, like door knocking, which is huge in like the solar business, roofing business, like pest control business, like you're talking about. But do door hangers work? Do you put like something on their garage? Some people are putting like these big ass 8x10 things on people's garages. Like that to me seems aggressive. I'm not doing something like that.
Yeah. I got a good idea for roofing, but hold that thought. So like, here's some other things we've done in way back in the day that still would work today. So, you know, early on struggling to make my business work, I had a sheet metal shop and I could fabricate things in a sheet metal shop, learned as a kid. And so this, you know, I'm from Vegas, a lot of taxi cabs. So the taxi cab guy comes over and says, hey, can you make me this thing that mounts on the back of the cab? And then I'm going to slide different signs and advertising things on the back of my cabs. Right. So we figured out and we made them. And so that was kind of the beginning of taxi cabs having this signs all over
the advertising.
Them.
Yeah. Right.
And then we used to build all the ones for the back and then those triangle things that sat on the,
the little A-frames, you know, on the roof. Yep.
Yeah. So we'd build them for these cab companies in Vegas. And so we started putting those on the back of our vans and have certain advertisement. And I'll never forget, I read this advertisement for this guy that used to, was a trade OG called Doc Rusk, right? And you could buy the Doc Rusk business system for $298,
old
right?
Old Doc Rusk.
And so he showed some of his ads, and he was a big Honeywell electronic air cleaner dealer, the biggest in the country, right? And he showed his ads on how he sold these air cleaners. And there was a newspaper ad that said, dirt for lunch. That's how, that was the newspaper ad that he would put called, the title is Dirt for Lunch. And they explained about the benefits of a electronic air cleaner, right? So, you know, we made our cab signs, put it on the back of the vans, and it said Dirt for Lunch. And, you know, some very quick, simple message about, you know, we can clean the air in your home, blah, 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 call us.
So it was air purification.
Yeah, air purification. Yep. So, you know, at stoplights, we'd get a lot of calls, actually. People would write it down. I mean, that's a method. We have those trucks are advertisement vehicles, right?
So you would make these at your sheet metal shop? Mm-hmm. And then put them on the trucks? That's great. Yeah.
You know, I can't stress enough about, you know, referral programs. You know, that's a very big discipline item you got to keep in and place your business. Sometimes we're good at it. Sometimes we're not so good at it. But you know, referral programs. There are companies literally in the home service space that have built very large, reputable companies only by referrals and keeping a disciplined approach to referral programs. Have you seen any work?
Which is very low cost per lead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. It is interesting though, when you, I was sitting in a board meeting, a couple weeks ago in Chicago, and I was looking at one of the businesses, that I'm not doing any marketing for, but one of the businesses in the portfolio. And when I looked at all their top clients, their top 10 clients, 9 of the 10 were all referrals. 9 of the 10. And then, I mean, I looked at digital marketing and there's a lot of lead diversification, but there was like only one in the top 10 that was a referral. On the other business, 9 out of 10. I was like, holy shit, like we're not pushing referral business. It's a discipline. But when you think about it, it should be one of the first things you think about. If you're going to a happy client and asking them for a referral, it's just, you got to get past the uncomfort of asking, but I think it's more comfortable than asking somebody like cold calling them. Right. So to me, it's just a discipline thing that makes a lot of sense. And it's back to basics, asking people for, you know, potential customers.
Yeah. And even if you have the most sophisticated branding and digital strategy in the industry, all these fundamental things still need to be in place in your business.
Yeah.
You agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, at Rhino, I think we still have room to work on that discipline in particular. You know, we don't do any outbounding. It's kind of like there's no outbounding because of the, I mean, I guess you could say there is because I'm going and speaking or this podcast, right? But so much comes in that I think they get away from asking for referrals.
By the way, outbounding still works, man. It's still a viable lead source. And, you know, I kind of fell into that one. It used to aggravate me. People call me on my cell phones and try to sell me cabinet resurfacing or something, right? And they all start out with the same way. How are you doing today? Yeah. Well, that tips you off, right? It's a telemarketer. So I'd let them go through their whole pitch. And then every time I'd say, or I still do this today, actually, I'd say, so, hey, so let me ask you something. How do you do over there? Do you make any money at the cabinet resurfacing place?
I know where this is going.
And, well, I know we do okay, blah, blah, blah. I said, well, listen, man, you ever think about getting something better, like where everybody has a need all the time? Well, like what? Like air conditioning. Like, you notice we live here in the desert, right? Right. And I would sell them on quitting their job. That was my game for frustrating me with my time. Is I'm gonna steal you and put you in my call center, right? And so even to this day, someone calls me, I'll wait, let them do their pitch, and then I'll solicit them to come work for us, right? And I've got a number of them. But the way that I figured this whole thing out on how the benefit to outbounding is, cabinet resurfacing lady, she kept my number for 2.5 years. And called me one day and said, okay, I'm ready. Are you ready? I said, I'm ready. Come on over. So she comes over.
2 years later.
And I said, look, you know, this was, we were a little smaller. I said, look, all I need you to do is, you know, I have 10 technicians and here's the schedule. Here's the board. I need you to the night before, two nights before, be filling this schedule. Everybody has to have a call on all these call spots, right? That's your job. Fill the schedule. And you're going to go through former clients. I'm going to keep buying defunct companies. I'm taking their database. I'm going to keep feeding you databases to work off of. We'll buy you lists if we have to, but just keep filling the schedule. And man, it was immediate. She took off immediately. And every single day we had a full schedule. And she'd fill them in with tune-ups or whatever we were doing, or duct inspections, things like that. And from that point on, we started expanding that and, you know, putting full teams in.
So there's a few little tactics. You think that the outbound strategy is still strong today?
I think it's still strong. And certainly, you know, when you have, you know, it's always funny to me when people always brag about the number of database, the clients they have in their database, because you know as well as I do, it doesn't mean anything. Like, okay, well, how many club memberships do you have that are really long repeat customers, or anybody who's used you, you know, over the last couple of years may remember your name, but for the most part, anybody past then doesn't. And so you need a team that's constantly working your database and calling your customers, and also, you know, with new texting and things like that, using that to stay on top of those customers and offer them different specials or remind them that we haven't seen you in a while. Maybe we should check your system and things like that.
So it does work. That's what I'm hearing you say.
It works. Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, so, and that's just, to me, I put that in the grassroots category, because that's kind of like some of the early things that you could do before all the technology, extra technology was involved, maybe radio and TV, that's been around for a hot minute. You had the black and white TV, I'm sure. He's shaking his head. Yes. Well, I appreciate you making the time coming over here, KG. I know it's not an easy drive over from Scottsdale, because it's like straight across and you got to take the interstates around, but I appreciate you making time for me. I'm glad we got you in here again. It's been a minute.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And I'll say this, you know, if you're looking for some calls, go get the card. Go find the card and be careful, but it's very effective. And really it goes back to this. Let me say it one more time. Especially in times when the increased competition, you know, you got to outthink. You got to outplay the competition. We're not going to do it with dollars anymore, because there's a lot of deep pockets and a lot of big companies. You just got to be better, and you got to be better. All the key fundamentals, the blocking and tackling, the disciplines inside the business, like get booking those calls, like the referral programs, like staying in touch with your customers. You know, I'll say this, Service Nation Alliance, of which I'm a member in, but they always had this, they always pushed this, that we should be communicating with our customer base minimum of 3 times a year, right? Some way. And they had different ways of doing it. One way that I did try that was very effective was they got a Valentine's Day card. They got a St. Patrick's Day card. They got a Memorial or Labor Day card, and they got like a holiday card, right? Just from the company, not necessarily selling something, but just to stay in touch and on top of those people.
Yep. Just the basics.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't always have to sell something. You're just trying to keep top of mind so that when something comes up, they're thinking of you.
Yep.
That's right. Yeah. Blocking and tackling. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, listen, I cannot wait for the follow-up episode on Forbes, man. That's going to be good. And then maybe we can talk about kind of the new stuff that you're getting into on a later episode as well. But
let's do that. And I'll be more consistent than Peterman.
Perfect. Yeah, you at this point you already are. listen, obviously you know how that business goes. Like, he has different opportunities comes up, and that takes precedence. And I agree.
You know, the Forbes man. Let me tell you this. It's a great story, and maybe we'll have Landon join us on the Forbes guy story, because he was there right there with me.
Okay.
And he was a co-conspirator. But I'll tell you this. He's turned out to be, you know, the Forbes article straightened him up, and he's been very successful in the industry, built and sold several companies, and done a great job. Still a great friend.
Do I know this person?
I don't think so.
Okay. You were quick to say that, so I think I really don't know this person. Okay. Well, listen, I'm happy to pull on Landon with this and have that conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I appreciate you giving me the time again. No, KG, it's always great having you on. I know the listeners always love having you on, and it's been too long already, so we cannot have this big old gap again, no matter how busy you get. Deal?
Deal.
Okay. And then I was talking with Haynes yesterday on his episode when we were recording it, and I asked him the same question I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to do something a little bit different this time, but You've been a part of every single Rhino X, and thank you for that. And you got an award for that, right?
Yeah,
you got
thank
an
you.
Award for that last year, and I was excited to give that to you, because we had one idea, you had another idea, we merged them together, and boom, Rhino X was born. So I appreciate you coming to those things. And you asked me, man, do people really want me to come back again, you know, and be a part of it? And the answer is, of course they do. Like, of course they do. No matter how many new influencers and gurus and all the people that are out there, there's only, to me, one set of OGs, one set of legends who deserve to be in that role. And you are one of those guys and my friend. So I always enjoy having you there. And everybody loves having you there, too. So I for sure have you back at Rhino X again in 2025, but I'm going to do it a little bit differently. So I don't know what you thought about what we did with Paul Kelly and Jonathan Bancroft, how we did that little fireside chat, and they kind of asked one another questions, which I thought was a great little session. I think that, and then I got a lot of great feedback. So I thought, we should maybe do some more of that, where it's not me asking the questions. Maybe there's a spot for a couple of the legends to be asking questions, or maybe there's pairs asking different guys questions. Maybe we're West Coasters asking East Coasters. Maybe we're, I don't know. I've not landed on it yet, but all I'm doing is planting a seed in your Ken Goodrich curious brain. So that way you can now come back to me and say, hey, you said this, how about doing this? I just planted a seed.
Okay, great. That session that you had at the Last X, I learned a lot from those two guys. I mean, I even picked up a lot of good gems from that. And again, kind of the theme of this particular podcast is, open your mind and go find solutions. Sometimes it really helps me to watch two people having a conversation, how they think and what are they thinking about. It's interesting to me, even in this private equity world, while they don't know the nitty gritties necessarily of us Viet Cong who've been running this business the way we've been running the business for decades in our tunnels and little cards and stuff, but they do when I listen to them think about the business and the how to scale and or how to increase its value and benefits for the shareholders and such, I listen, because that's a key way that I learn is listen to each other people, how they think and what things they're thinking about, and gets my brain kind of opened up to new thoughts.
Yeah. You're always being a student. We've talked about this many times. You're still constantly learning and taking things from other people. And I really respect that. And we were talking about that yesterday too. So one, Rhino X 2025, the OG returns.
I'm in.
All right. And then we'll think through that thing together and see if we can't come up with something that's a little bit different, this time around versus the previous four seasons. And by the way, these last four Rhino X, like, I've always had to one up myself. I think I've done it. I feel like I've done a good job on one upping. I'm like trying to figure out how the hell I'm going to one up in 2025. Maybe I got to get rid of that mindset and it's okay where it was at. It's pretty cool. And I don't mean by making it bigger. That's not the option. I just mean what else can I do to make it stay a unique experience, but still, the main thing is people want to come and hang out, and be able to actually spend time, with you or with, Dave or Ken or whoever's coming. And they get to do that. And you guys put the time in with them. And that is what makes the event so successful. And I have to go back to that. That really is what the event's about. The other stuff is just the dog and pony show. I want it to be fun and a cool experience. Maybe not a midget Burger King guy, but I'll take it into consideration.
Now you just gave me an idea.
Oh gosh.
But look, I think the event is unique, and it's nothing like anything I've seen in the industry. And I've been to a lot of events in this industry, right? So it's unique. It's first class. It's exclusive. I think you're doing all the right things in it. I'm sure we can talk off camera, and we can brainstorm on a couple other things that I'll throw at you what I'm thinking.
Love
but
it.
For the most part, I think you're doing a great job and a great service to the industry and a great example for the other organizations to figure out how to pull together really nice events.
That is a very nice compliment. Thank you, Ken Goodrich. Well, listeners, keep tuning in for the stuff. Ken just said he's going to not take as long of a break between podcasts. And who knows, he might be one more podcast and you're ahead of Peterman, on the guest profile. Because you've actually might have been on, now that I think about it, you might have been on more podcasts than he has been as a co-host so far.
Oh, really?
Just because
I've been on a few here, Alan.
You've been on a couple. Yeah, you've been on a couple. That's because everybody wants you to come back and be on. So it's like, okay. And you were like, I don't want to be. Do I need to be back on again? The answer is yes.
Hey, let's talk about this real quick.
Uh-oh. Okay.
So, so the First Step Facebook group that we started. So we started that when, like 2020, right?
Middle of 2020.
Yeah, and so. Because I was walking every day, I'm still walking every day. And you and Paul thought, let's put this group up and kind of inspire the industry to go,
exercise, walk,
walk,
yeah,
exercise, support each other, but it'd be in an industry specific thing. So, just a couple of things to report on that. So we kind of created it in Lark, and then Paul had set it up so that we could. We had the Strava app and we were posting our walks every day. So, you know, the reason why it was good for me, because when I don't walk, I'm like, I don't want to let the team down, right? I don't want to let the people in the group, because I don't want to be the schmuck who walked with Ken Goodrich and I never walk, right? And so it keeps me motivated to walk. But the interesting thing about it, so there's about 1,500 members and I don't know, a couple hundred that are active or something. Sure. And I don't know how this, those stat works on the, those stats, really what they mean in the group, but seems like a meaningful number. But it's amazing to me, the success stories on that group, right? On the, you know, with that group, right? Like, Greg McAfee, who just put it in his mind and had, he had a heart attack and he said, I'm taking back my health. He's early 60s. And lost 100 pounds
and looks great.
Yeah, it looks like you know, Atlas, you know, buff working out all day. And you know, he was posting every day in that group, and you know, has thanked me many times for the motivation that this group had helped him. And there's countless stories of people who've lost 100 pounds, people who, you know, survived a heart attack because they were walking. The doctor said, had you not been walking like you were, you would never survive this. David Maester, who just set a goal for 1,000 miles, and he just got so into it and the physical and mental clarity that he got out of walking, he's just got obsessed with it. He banged out 1,000 miles from beginning of the year to early August, right? And he flew down to Tahoe, where I was staying, and we took the last 5 miles together, and a couple other guys came out that from the group, and we all walked together, and you know, he celebrated his 1,000-mile walk. He's lost 47 pounds. His wife cried there and said, thank you for saving my husband. You saved his life. And our family's so much better, you know, from him getting out and getting healthy, this good, healthy routine going, right? So, but there's so many success stories that have come out of that. So I just got contacted the other day from a pretty big magazine who's going to do a whole feature on that, the First Step, sweet, and everything we've accomplished with it. So great job. Thanks for the getting us started on that.
Well, I remember, God, I can't believe that's been 2020. It's been 4 years ago. And actually that's just a couple of the stories I've seen people post in there, or that I've heard like off the side. You know, so it is cool that you had some of people starting to come to Tahoe and finish their walk with you. I thought that's a pretty cool thing. But it's been helping a lot of people. So if you're listening right now and you know what he's talking about, you can go to Facebook. There's a group. It was
The First Step with Ken Goodrich.
Yeah. So go and join it. And it should motivate you to walk and do something. And if anything, if it's not a weight loss journey, that's okay. It's just about, you know, going out and exercising and your physical health and help, you know, for me, anytime I'm doing something physical, it helps my mental health. So go and get involved in it.
Yeah. And I throw, every so often I'll throw a little business stuff, you know, cause it's all industry people. I'll throw some business stuff, just kind of get people think about other things, post some of the books and stuff I listen to when I'm walking. And I don't know, it's a neat little community. And my vision for it though was to, as still is, to, if we can get companies to get a meaningful number of people per company and start to have competitions, get the people in the office walking around their offices and things like that, share pictures and, you know, see if there's some competitions could be had and just kind of positively affect the entire industry by simple moves like walking.
Yeah. And using your influence to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was a great idea. And obviously it's, it still continues to grow and you still see people posting and still motivating people to do it. So.
Yeah. But I have to, because if I didn't have some reason, I probably wouldn't get up and walk. But I know I was going to be embarrassed. I would probably wouldn't walk.
There's a little pride attached to it. So he's doing it. Well, I think it's cool. And it's helping, you know, watch your journey over these years. And I mean, in this industry, I know I've told you this a lot. It's been cool for me to watch how you've shifted over 4 years and like used your influence to do so much good in this industry. I didn't know you before. Like I knew of you, but we didn't know each other until 2020. So pre that, I just knew of you and the business. So that's the only experience I've had with you. But even in that, like watching your transformation has been pretty badass.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. So, okay. I was supposed to be done with this podcast like 10 minutes ago. So I know I'm going to be late for a meeting, but we were on one and it was good. So I stuck with it. But I appreciate you making the time and coming in here, like I said, and sharing these stories. Like it is inspirational. And again, the whole point of this podcast, if you look on the wall behind me, it says it's a podcast that gives back. That is the point of this whole thing. That is when we get to the point. Point is like, what can we do to help you, the listener? Doesn't always need to be business. It can also be if there's other tools that you need to use. I think mental health is incredibly important. I think physical health is incredibly important. And I think both of those things can play well into your business. You know, the better you feel, the better your home life, I think the better you are in business too. You're not being drugged down by something, you know, that's making you go to work and worry about shit. Like you can be all in on work. So that's where I think something like this is super helpful. Like, you know, so go join the Facebook group if you haven't already and follow along, but appreciate you coming in here, KG. Next time we've already set the stage for, we're going to talk a little bit about what you've been doing and what you've been building. Cause it's already amazing. Of course it is. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Forbes, man. And I'm going to text Landon Brewer and say, hey, Landon, do you want to join us for, for Forbes man conversation? And he's going to be like, I know what you're talking about. And he's probably gonna say, yeah, I'll join you.
Here, let me give you one last teaser on the Forbes man.
Okay.
We did it on April Fool's Day.
On purpose. On purpose, you scheduled it on April Fool's Day.
That's all I'm saying.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Listeners, you got a couple of new nuggets from Ken on the guerrilla marketing tactics. Some of the, some of those outside the box tactics are things that Ken's used, or just some of the basic blocking and tackling. So maybe go back and use, you know, and do some of these things, take a look in the mirror too. And again, we were just talking about pride. I've been saying this a couple of times, but don't let your pride get in the way of growing your business. If you know you don't know how to do something, stop saying you do. Like go and find some answers to figure it out. Like you're worth it, your employees are worth it. Do the things. But sometimes maybe you just need to go back to trying something you've never done before, like something as simple as a postcard that's white with black text on it that says attention or attention, whatever it is. But try something. You don't gotta do everything, but you gotta do something. No, 0 days.